Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, the current events program from VOA Learning English. Today is January 1st, 2016, New Year's Day. Every day, we bring you news and information in simple, easy-to-understand American English. Today, we start the year with a lesson on verb forms that act like nouns. Gerunds can sometimes be hard to understand. Our grammar experts will explain the best ways to use gerunds. But first, Christopher Jones-Cruz tells us about efforts by Geneva, Switzerland, to again be a center of peace negotiations for conflicts around the world.
The Swiss city of Geneva is planning activities to regain the title of peace capital of the world. Geneva is home to the United Nations European headquarters. Many peace negotiations have taken place in the city. The United States and the Soviet Union met there to talk about controlling nuclear weapons. Other talks included ways to end wars in Afghanistan and Lebanon. Other talks in Geneva included Balkan nations that were at war. Talks to end those wars took place in Geneva throughout the 1990s. They were led by the United Nations. Michael Mahler leads the UN office in Geneva. He said he believes his agency and the city of Geneva will act as a center for peace in 2016. He says talks to end the fighting in Yemen will begin January 14th, and he says Syrian peace negotiations will begin later that month. Staffan de Mistura is the UN representative to the Syrian peace talks. He is meeting with people who will take part in the talks. Mueller says everybody, almost everybody, wants these talks to be successful so that we can finally get a political solution to this really unacceptable problem. The United Nations led two Syrian peace negotiations in 2014. Both failed. Last week, the UN Security Council approved a plan for the talks to start again. Mahler says Geneva is a center for conflict resolution because of its reputation as a neutral place. People can focus on what he called the business of peace. Mahler notes that there were 10,000 meetings and conferences led by the United Nations this year at its European headquarters in Geneva and in Switzerland. I'm Christopher Jones-Cruz.
Next, our everyday grammar program will tell you about tricky parts of speech. Gerunds and gerundives. Listen to examples and good usage for these nouns that are based on verbs.
English learners have difficulty with gerunds and infinitives. A gerund is the ing form of a verb that functions the same as a noun. For example, running is fun. In this sentence, running is the gerund. It acts just like a noun.
The infinitive form of a verb appears either as the basic form with no marking or with the word to. For example, you can say, I might run to the store, or I like to run. In this sentence, to run is the infinitive.
It is difficult for English learners to know whether to use a gerund or an infinitive after a verb. Here's an example. Which sentence is correct? Sentence 1. I suggested going to dinner. Sentence 2. I suggested to go to dinner. Sentence 1 with the gerund is correct. I suggested going to dinner. Why? You can only use a gerund after the verb suggest.
Let's take the word like. You can say, I like running, or I like to run. Both sentences have the same meaning. You can use either a gerund or an infinitive after like. Now let's try enjoy. We can say, I enjoy running. But we cannot say, I enjoy to run. Why? Only a gerund can follow the verb enjoy.
Are you confused yet? You're not alone. Gerunds and infinitives confuse even very advanced English learners. Basically, some verbs are followed by gerunds, some verbs are followed by infinitives, and some verbs can be followed by gerunds or infinitives. Native speakers do not think about the difference. But English learners have to memorize the hundreds of different verb combinations.
Here are a few tips. Tip number 1. You almost always find a gerund after a preposition. For example, she is afraid of flying. In this sentence, of is the preposition, and flying is the gerund. You cannot say, she is afraid of to fly. An infinitive cannot be the object of a preposition. Only a gerund can. You could say, she is afraid to fly. But in this sentence, the preposition of is gone.
Tip number 2. When you are talking about an activity, you usually use a gerund. For example, I stopped smoking. You can describe many activities by using go before a gerund. Let's go shopping, or we went skiing.
Let's see how much you know. Try to complete these sentences using the verb study. Ready? I'll read the first part of the sentence, and you finish it. I enjoy
studying.
I considered
studying.
I managed
to study.
I hope
to study.
I suggested
studying.
I like
studying or to study.
This is only a simple introduction to a complicated grammar topic.
There is no quick and easy way to learn gerunds and infinitives. It takes years of practice and familiarity with the English language. Next time you read or listen to a VOA Learning English story, pay attention to the use of gerunds and infinitives. Over time, you will begin to hear the right verb combination. Below is a helpful reference list for using gerunds and infinitives. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's today's program. Happy New Year to all our listeners from all of us here at VOA Learning English. Keep listening for our report on trade talks between the EU and Vietnam. Then, in our American History program, The Making of a Nation, we tell you about the presidency of Grover Cleveland, a Democrat who faced opposition from his own party as well as Republicans. Join us again next time for As It Is on The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Vietnamese could buy Italian machinery, and Austrians could wear more athletic shoes from Vietnam. That is because Vietnam is moving closer to reaching a trade deal with the European Union. Negotiations ended December 2nd. For Vietnam, the agreement would diversify its trade with nations other than China and the U.S. For Europe, it would increase trade in Asia when attention has centered on the huge U.S.-supported Trans-Pacific Partnership. EU officials have praised the Vietnam deal. They say it removes 99% of tariffs. The deal would be the EU's first with a developing country. It also could serve as a model for future free trade agreements. Simon Vandenberg is the Dutch Consul General in Ho Chi Minh City. He told the European Chamber of Commerce that the deal sets the reference for others in Southeast Asia. The proposed agreement requires Communist Vietnam to reform state-run companies and strengthen environmental protection. It also links commerce with development aid. EU trade negotiator Jana Herzig said Vietnam would receive support to increase technology that preserves the environment. Support also would be aimed at the energy, healthcare, and tourism industries. She said the money or the funds which we are giving to Vietnam are broader than just the capacity building related to the free trade agreement. Economist Dennis McCormick at Loyola University in Maryland questions if the agreement is good for Vietnam. He says the European agreement is less centered on business compared with the 12-nation TPP trade deal. He criticized the TPP as written by corporate supporters. But both agreements are expected to increase the cost of medicine in developing countries. This is because of stronger rules for patents that will prevent copying. It will extend market rights to makers of some medicines. It really is the case that it's going to hurt the poor people, those who can't afford the drugs, McCormick said. The European Union has tried to reach a single trade agreement with the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, but those efforts failed. The EU then changed its strategy and is negotiating deals with individual governments. Singapore was the first to reach an agreement, followed by Vietnam. Jana Herzig said if the Vietnam deal is finalized, it could set an example and speed up talks with other parties. These could include the Philippines, Malaysia, and Thailand. Herzig predicts the EU-Vietnam agreement will be published by January. Vietnam has been seeking deals with many nations, including South Korea and Israel. And that's the VOA Learning English Economics Report. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Grover Cleveland was elected President of the United States in 1884. He was the first Democratic Party candidate to win a presidential election in almost 28 years. Grover Cleveland defeated James Blaine, a senator from the Republican Party. The election was very close. Many Republicans did not vote for their own candidate. They voted for Cleveland instead. They believed he was honest and that Blaine was not. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell us about the presidency of Grover Cleveland.
Cleveland began his administration by announcing that he would reduce waste in the government. He would make government more like business. He said he would support reforms to let ability, not politics, decide who would get government jobs. Democratic Party leaders were quick to protest. They explained to Cleveland that the party owed jobs to those who had worked for his victory. Cleveland had to compromise. He permitted about 80,000 government jobs to be taken from Republicans and given to Democrats. This left 12,000 jobs. These would be given to people who did the best on government examinations. Cleveland's decision angered Republican reformers who had voted for him. They accused him of surrendering to the leaders of the Democratic Party.
On other issues, however, Cleveland refused to compromise. He opposed government economic aid to any industrial group. He vetoed a bill giving aid to farmers whose crops had failed. And he vetoed another bill giving more money to men who had served as soldiers during America's Civil War of the 1860s. The president also showed his independence by investigating gifts of public land that the government had made to the railroad, wood, and cattle industries. He found that many of these land grants were made illegally. He got back much of the land. He opened it to settlers.
President Cleveland signed into law two bills he believed would improve government. One was the Electoral Count Act. It set new rules for counting the electoral votes of the states. It would prevent future disputes over presidential elections, like the one in 1876. The other bill changed the list of officials who could become president if the president and vice president died or were removed from office. First on the list, after the vice president, was the Secretary of State. Congress changed this law again in 1947, and there have been four amendments since then. Today, the Speaker of the House of Representatives would succeed the Vice President as President. Then would come the President pro tempore of the Senate, and then the Secretary of State.
Grover Cleveland approved a bill giving the government control over the cost of railroad transportation. The bill was called the Interstate Commerce Act. It limited the amount of money railroads could demand from people who needed to travel or transport their goods. The law established the idea that the government could control industries when necessary for the public good. President Cleveland also was concerned about a growing number of labor disputes that took place in the United States in the late 1800s. He proposed that Congress create a labor committee to help settle the disputes.
Congress failed to act on this proposal, but its lack of action did not stop the rise of a labor organization that had been formed a few years earlier. The group soon would become the most important labor union in the United States. It was the American Federation of Labor, or AFL. Led by Samuel Gompers, the AFL was different from earlier labor groups. It did not try to put all workers into one union. Instead, it tied together a number of different unions and gave them general leadership.
The AFL was different in other ways. It did not oppose the economic system of capitalism. It said only that labor should get more of the earnings of capitalism. The AFL also opposed extremists who used labor protests to change the social system. What the AFL called for were things workers wanted immediately: higher wages, a shorter work day, better working conditions. One of its first demands was an 8-hour work day. This demand led to a number of strikes and protests throughout the country.
The most serious incident took place in Chicago's Haymarket Square. More than 1,000 union supporters went to a meeting there, organized by an extremist. They stood calmly and listened to speeches. Just before the meeting ended, someone threw a bomb into a group of policemen. The bomb exploded with a blinding flash. 7 policemen were killed. The other policemen began shooting at the crowd. Some people in the crowd fired back. When it was all over, 10 persons had been shot to death. 50 others were hurt. The incident set off a wave of fear and anger across the country. The public demanded action against union extremists. The Haymarket Square violence slowed the growth of organized labor in the United States for many years. It would be some time before labor became a powerful force in national events.
In the spring of 1886, President Cleveland announced that he was to be married. The ceremony took place in the White House. A few months later, President Cleveland and the First Lady went to New York City for the official ceremony welcoming the Statue of Liberty. The statue was a gift to the people of the United States from the people of France. It represented the alliance between their two countries during America's war for independence from Britain. The statue was the creation of French artist Frédéric Auguste Bartholdi. He decided to make a statue that would represent freedom, a statue of liberty. He said it should stand on an island in New York Harbor. There, he said, it would welcome all who came to America through that gateway.
Bartholdi decided to make a copper statue in the image of a woman, Lady Liberty. High above her head, she would hold a torch of freedom to light the world. The statue's face was the face of Bartholdi's mother. The artist asked French engineer Gustave Eiffel to build a steel support to hold the heavy statue. Eiffel was the man who later built the Eiffel Tower in Paris. The statue was built in France. Then the pieces were sent across the Atlantic Ocean. It was rebuilt in New York.
Grover Cleveland and his wife were not the only Americans to attend the Statue of Liberty ceremonies in 1886. Thousands of people crowded onto ships in the harbor to watch the great event. Thousands of others crowded the shorelines around the harbor. Everyone cheered wildly when a signal was given and a huge cloth fell from the statue. Lady Liberty stood holding her torch high for freedom. Under her feet were the broken chains of tyranny. Below the statue was a poem. It called to the poor and oppressed people of the world. It told them to come to America to find a land of hope and freedom.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
The Statue of Liberty was a great success. It was one of the great engineering wonders of its time, and it filled Americans with pride in their tradition of freedom and openness to people from all lands. We will continue our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.